From American Public Media, this is an APM documentary.
One thing about my education journey is that there are times where I have felt so alone. And alone in the sense that, like, I'm physically alone, but also mentally, emotionally, and as an Indigenous student, I've oftentimes felt so alone that, like, it is kind of scary. Like, being the only person in the classroom, like, there are times where, like, I have not seen someone who looked like myself in months.
You're listening to Standing in Two Worlds, Native American College Diaries. I'm Neve Nez, and I recorded that entry about my tough start in college. I'm Hopi and Navajo. I chose a majority white university far from home to study pre-med. All my life, I had to learn to navigate two worlds. It's extra work a lot of my classmates didn't have to worry about. America's education system isn't the same for Native students. We come with different histories. A lot of people don't know it, but education was actually used to erase our cultures, to stop our parents and grandparents from speaking our languages. Now we're learning to go to college on our own terms. We're finding ways to make our own use of a system built by the white people who took our lands. We're strengthening the ties to our native roots and also creating ways to support our communities. We want the Native youth coming up after us to see that this can be done. So over the next hour, we'll tell you our stories. The first story comes from Ruben Quito Stately, a student at Augsburg University in Minneapolis. From his earliest memories, Ruben saw education as truth-seeking, filling in what was missing. Where were the stories of Native people in his history books? Ruben starts his story at a high school in St. Paul, Minnesota, where he's giving a presentation.
We are super excited to welcome everyone to SPA's first ever assembly in honor of Indigenous Peoples Day.
We are thrilled to introduce our speaker, Ruben Quito Stately. His stage name is Quito. He is a 21-year-old recording artist from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and a college student currently attending Augsburg University.
Hamidakiapi, Ruben Amakiapi, Gamaza Didi Hemie, Manija Ska, Washichiwiya, St. Paul, Imacha Kedo, Gawana, Shakpeo Tuwe, Wati, Bredeshak, Aisanti, Hematahan. Damakota. That's how you say hello in Dakota. Totally kidding. All right. But if I'm going to come speak to you all, I need to speak to you all in my mother tongue, the Dakota language, the original language of the land that we're standing on, Manishota Makoche, we called it, for many, many, many years, thousands of years before anyone else was here. So anyway, that was my introduction. I told you I'm from the White Bluffs. And then I said, nowadays, in English, we call it St. Paul.
Putting rhymes on the page. I was 12 years young when we made Renegade. 13 years old, I was throwing shade. 14 years young in the street blowing haze. All this time I seen the world differently. Colors vividly, I'm using words for imagery.
I grew up in an urban place where a bunch of Native kids had long hair. And it wasn't uncommon for us to have long hair. We could joke and play and we could be ourselves. And it was me being surrounded by other boys that were just like me, being among my own people. I'm pretty sure it was like my first week in a public school. And I'm pretty sure I was 4. But I remember meeting a white student. He was the only white student in the class. He asked me, where are you from? And he thinks I'm Mexican. And I told him, oh, I'm not Mexican. I actually think this is the first time I ever had to specify who I was. And he says, well, if you're not Mexican, like, where are you from? And I said, I'm from here. I'm an American Indian. I'm a Dakota. And he laughed in my face, and he told me, there's no Indians left. They're all dead. So I remember my mom picking me up from school and me going home that day. And I asked her, looking out the car window, why do other people think that?
Oh, I clearly remember that day. I knew that public schools were misinformed, and I knew the miseducation of other students about Indigenous history was prevalent. And at the time, we really didn't know, except to kind of avoid public education, how to change that narrative. And so since that moment of that little boy was kind of like a reminder, a trigger, hey, this is the work that we have to do.
There were no trees here. Find a spot.
My mom, Ramona Quito Stately, made her career in Indian education.
So this is the Bidelte.
One day, she and I took a visitor from out of town to a place that's sacred to the Dakota people. It's called Bidelte. It's an island between two rivers in St. Paul.
This is the confluence of the Minnesota River and the Mississippi River. And we also refer to it as Makachokayaking, and that means the center of our universe, because this is our creation story.
The best teachers I ever met were my family members, my mother and my dad, and my grandfather, who took good care and nourished my headspace to become a Dakota thinker, speaker, and leader.
Ruben, did you want to share a song?
Yeah, so I have this song I usually share when people come here. It's good when people come here and they find some truth, and then, you know, they let the land tell a story, and then they let Dakotas tell the story. Because anywhere else, often it's not us telling our own story.
To a Dakota way of thinking and believing, everyone can be a teacher at any given time. That's why when people speak, we give them the floor. It doesn't matter if you're the oldest at the table, doesn't matter if you're the youngest at the table. All the people that I looked up to, they gave me the time, energy, and kind of space to be the leader sometimes or be the teacher sometimes. And what that did is it just strengthened that place for me to speak up and say what I felt like I needed to say. In this Western culture of teaching, there's one person in the room who gets to be the teacher the whole time. So I think there's a culture shock when we walk into a school. And I also think that teachers have been taught things in school. They could be totally uninformed about Native people or misinformed. So I had to be the student in the classroom in seventh grade where my teacher had a, and this is a non-white person, mind you, this is a non-white person, and they're teaching a history class, seventh grade history class, and they start talking about the Indian Removal Act, and they started talking about the white perspective and the Native perspective, and as my hand shot up, and I said, I don't think you know the Native perspective, and I don't think you should be teaching it. And she said, I have a degree, I have a master's degree in history. And I said, well, I know that white men wrote all those books, and you cannot tell the Native perspective. Like I told her, I said, you're doing a terrible job saying how Native people thought about the Indian Removal Act. And she sent me out in the hall for, I don't know what you'd call that, but insubordination of some kind or whatever. But I wasn't supposed to be the teacher at the time. I was supposed to be the student, and I was supposed to shut up and learn or whatever, you know. So my mom, my dad, and my grandpa, they didn't really raise me to be that way. They raised me to speak up when I know something, and so that's what I did. What kind of Native student does that? A normal Native student would take the shame and put the shame on themselves, even when they know better, which is crazy. Like, but basically the weight of that scenario is on our shoulders. And for one moment, I put it on my teacher's shoulders, and she did not like it. She hated it.
This song is called Dear My Future Son. The sky's the limit, that's what they told a fool. Don't be surprised if that's what they tell you in school. The standard education will fail to reach you, and your teachers will probably fail to teach you. But they're gonna point at you for the blame. You'll interpret their failure as your own shame. Their curriculum will misrepresent you, and your society will probably not accept you. Sadly, that's just how it goes.
But I was very young, and my parents were talking about my future. And they just said very matter of fact, you're going to college. So I didn't question it. I was like, oh, I'm going to college? Cool. And I pictured it for a long time.
That was really the goal when we had children, was to prepare them to be native, but also to be able to navigate this white world. It's important. We can't ignore it. We have to be able to navigate jobs and owning property and all those things and be competitive. And we also have to acknowledge and understand our cultural lifeways.
I was pretty dead set on American Indian Studies. And that was by the time I was in 10th grade. I knew that American Indian Studies would help me fill in the gaps for all the times in which I don't understand colonization here in America. You know, how have Native people from all these different nations, hundreds of nations, how have we all become American? Or in what ways have we totally assimilated, but in what ways have we resisted? You know, like, there's so many things that I wanted to know, and I was hungry for it. So I said American Indian Studies, I'm like dead set on that. When it all came down to it, I have an amazing scholarship to come here to Augsburg.
All right, we're live.
So yeah, tell us about yourself, Eric. Tell us who you are.
I'm Eric Buffalohead. I'm from White Eagle, Oklahoma. I'm Ponca. And my job is being the chair of the American Indian Studies Department here at Augsburg University in Minneapolis.
So I think I'm just going to reverberate some questions that were asked of me. What could universities do to support Native students?
Part of the issue is, even today, even though it's, you know, 2022, there's a lot of Native students who are first time. That's their first person in their family to go to university or college. And so that's always a really tough experience because you don't have your parents' advice to fall back on. That's big. Native students are already facing the huge issue of having such a high dropout rate in high school that the number of them here is small to begin with. And then, you know, you run into the same problems, lack of role models and mentors. I mean, what do we have? Two Native employees at Augsburg now, or maybe only me, I don't even know. I think there might be two.
So what are some things that Native students bring to their universities that's invaluable?
Well, I think one of the most important things is that they're representatives of the 574 sovereign nations, and to other students, that's maybe the first time they've ever really been able to really understand what that means. Hey, we have this big United States, but there's 574 federally recognized tribes, and they're sovereign nations. We represent a really interesting worldview in that we are, whether we like it or not, a conquered people in our own land. I mean, we're almost like POWs in a way. We're in our own land, but, you know, maybe mainstream Americans need to understand, because I think they don't really grasp the idea of themselves being immigrants. Hey, you guys are foreigners here, you know, and we were here before you, and you really should, you know, grasp and understand the complexity of the relationship that has existed in the last 500 years for Native peoples. All of the traditions and everything has been kind of stifled down by policies of assimilation, and as we try to prop up as much of that culture as we can and embrace things like language and spirituality and just worldview in general. And having all these Native students around and the experiences they bring is really cool.
All right. Can you read that to me?
Atewayeki Robert E.
For my whole education, I have known that whatever I learn here at Augsburg, I'm going to take back to my people. And the people of mine that I focus on are the young ones. I've got an internship at a Native charter school here in Minneapolis, Bedote Learning Center, teaching kindergartners.
In Washichuiapi, what does that mean? We chalk be.
The sun is a big star.
Yeah, the sun is a very big star. That's what we were saying. They're at this age where you can spark their inspiration and tell them, hey, you could go to school further and you could learn the truth like I did. Even if you're not inspired by all the same things that I was, there's so many things that you could do. Like, maybe you're talented at something in school and you've never been given the space or time to flourish, and that college is a space where you do that, you know? And if you're in high school and you've only experienced high school, it's terrible, you know? You have like 7 classes a day. You're expected to be good at 7 things at the same time. Like, come on. Young people trying to go to college, I always tell them, you got like 4 classes, dude, and you're telling them what you want to learn. You're telling them what time of day you want to learn it, and it's way better. So I think that it's an act of resistance because in the end, whether we like it or not, this is a capitalist system, and the best way that we can support our people and ourselves and our families is to make money. And then also that degree, you could bring it back to your people and get a job for your tribe, or you know, maybe you can go to a non-native space and you can help create native space in somewhere new. To me, it's an act of resistance because you're able to indigenize new space, or you strengthen the space that your people are already in.
That's Ruben Kito Stately. Ruben graduated from Augsburg University in May of 2022. In his first year out of college, he'll be creating an album with Native youth in Minneapolis, exploring themes of wellness and drug prevention. I'm Neve Nez. You're listening to Standing in Two Worlds, Native American College Diaries. Next up, we're going to hear from Archie Yellow. He's a student at Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College. It's in Cloquet in northern Minnesota, near the Fond du Lac Indian Reservation, where he's a member. Archie has an amazing story about taking a second run at college, and this time he's on fire to succeed.
Okay. Buju. Archie Indigenicas. Mukwan Dudanum. Nagaji Wanungan Dunchaba. Just a little easy saying. Let me go through what I got done saying to y'all. I said, hello, Buju. My name is Archie. Archie Indigenicas. Mukwan Dudanum. My clan is Mukwa. Nagaji Wanungan Dunjaba. I'm from Fond du Lac. Fond du Lac is where I'm from. Quick little introduction. Nothing crazy. The Ojibwe language. Some might know it as Chippewa. I was born in Minneapolis, 91, in Hennepin County, you know, right downtown Minneapolis. My family was living in the projects, but like most Native families and most Natives that lived in the cities, we bounced around, like, you know what I'm saying? I spent summers in the res, going to grandma's house. So I'm in my family, I'm the oldest, and I have 7 siblings, 5 brothers and 2 sisters. Our ages range from what, me, I'm 30, and the youngest is 15, 16. Me and my brothers, we all used to be like in this huge Native gang. It's probably like something everyone's heard of. Native mob. It's like huge Native gang in the cities all over Minnesota. Getting fast money and then like just living a fast life. That was like the goals and the lifestyle. I'm one of the blessed, lucky few that even were able to escape anything like that. I had a lot of homeboys that didn't even make it to 18. You know, I thought I was going to be in prison or just, you know, stuck in this loop of gangbanging, living that life. I thought that was going to be it. But something always told me that there was more. So my story, I want y'all to know, is like of me getting my life together for me and my family. And it happened. It worked. It really happened. My first experience at college, it wasn't a great one.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! Starting out? Well, Lake Superior College can prepare you to...
I went to Lake Superior College. This is like the first school I knew about, and it was a community college.
Lake Superior College offers training in a plethora of programs.
And I didn't know what to go for. I didn't even know like what you should do or nothing. It was just like total shoot in the dark. You know, I just went there, signed up. I think there was only like 2 other Natives that I knew. And those guys both left within the first few weeks. Yeah, so I did my math, writing. I took this one class that was really nice. It was titled like Finding Success in College or something like that. And it was the only class out of all the other 3 that I actually passed because I liked it. and I was the only one that I was interested in. Like, the stuff she talked about really hit me, like, what you needed to succeed in school and just in life. She talked about having this foundation, like, you know what I'm saying, having a stable job, having a stable house, a stable life, and then you can move on, and then you can look at schooling, and then you can look at higher education, and I was completely blown away by how right she was, because I was completely, like, you know, say, not stable. I didn't have a good home, and I was couch surfing, going from homeboy's crib to homeboy's crib. So, yeah, it was just really bad experience. I did not do too well my first time around in school. Then, yeah, I moved down to the cities, and my dad helped me get a job moving furniture. That was a good paying job, you know, like 16, 17 an hour. I had a son, like, when I was 18, right, 19. But that didn't, like, do much to motivate me at the time. Because all people around me, they were off deadbeat dads, too, and having kids left and right. So that's all I saw, right? I missed out on my son the first part of his whole life. Something I'll never be able to get back. Then I had my twins, yo. And that's when it, like, all changed. Like, I was, like, 24, 25. I knew I didn't want to gangbang and stuff no more. But I knew, like, I couldn't do this, like, moving furniture stuff forever. And then me and that girl, Rick, weren't at all fit for parenting. My twins and she moved back to South Dakota, go stay with her mom and her parents and her family so that, you know, saying it'd be easier living for her. So after my twins left, I knew if we got up north, closer to the res and stuff, like, they would help us out. Getting on the casino payroll, it's been a real good place to, like, get work. They've always had my back, and they've always gave me a job. The pandemic hit, so I knew I had to do something. So I said, all right, let's see if I can go back to school.
You're listening to Standing in Two Worlds, Native American College Diaries, a documentary from American Public Media. We'll take a short break and then get back into Archie's story. At age 28, he decides to take a second shot at college and at making a new life.
I'm defying mad odds, you know? Look, I mean, I'm supposed to be here with all these guys on the res, walking around, you know? No life or no goals. That was me, man. I had nothing.
You can find portraits of the three of us on the APM Reports website, apmreports.org. You can also browse APM's entire archive of education documentaries. Support for this program comes from Lumina Foundation, the Spencer Foundation, and the Education Writers Association. More in a moment. This is APM, American Public Media.